Welcome to Serial Podcast 9.
Jerry D, hit us with the intro.
Oh, everybody, I'm Gerard DiPeralta.
And I'm Kevin Peterson.
And I'm Ryan Benoit. And this is Serial Podcast 9, episode 93. Hey,
yeah,
how are you?
Sorry.
What do you want,
Jerry? I was going to say that was the most normal. That was the most normal way to say it you've ever done. You said Serial Podcast 9. I like it. You said Serial Podcast 9. And then you said episode 93. It wasn't like Serial Podcast 9, episode something after.
I hope it's episode 93.
Since you edit the podcast, okay, yes. you could just do a little voiceover of your own at any time. Exactly.
Yeah.
You could think of funny responses and put them in. Like, oh, that would have been a funny thing to say. And then you put it in post. Maybe I am doing the whole podcast
on your own.
Yeah, I actually just cut out Jerry and say all of his facts. If that is the case, though, this week I would have a few corrections, because after our top 10 rear wheel drive episode, sedans, that's not even what the episode's called, and I really butchered it. But I had a few people reach out to me, but it was about Gerard, your knowledge of Mercedes. People were mildly concerned that maybe you were not spitting straight facts. I'll give you what we got, and then we'll go from there. Okay.
I will preface this with, like, it's basically just a bunch of, like, oh, this year actually had this motor, which actually made this amount, and then the next year actually had this motor, which was this displacement, and this made this amount. You know, it's, yeah. I mean, it's true. It's just a lot of, like...
I will preface this with, I'm going to read it to you, but it might as well be Greek, because my brain just turns off. Gerard was talking about AMGs and kept mentioning the later 4.0 TT63Ss, but the W211 generation E55 was probably the craziest, and they switched to the 63 designation with a 6.2 NA V8, but the 55 with the supercharged M113K 5.4 V8 was faster. 470 horsepower, 516 foot-pounds of torque in 2003. They were also probably the most reliable AMGs after the 210s, but those rust like no one's business, so fuck them, even though I love them. That's in brackets. Also, CLS was what Kevin was talking about, but came in a 5 and later a 63. What Gerard was thinking about is about it being the lesser model was the 53 versus the 63. The 55 was the top model and got replaced with the 63. Do not ask me for clarification, because none of that made any sense to me.
I mean, it sounds like a Mercedes nerd telling us what's up. And I mean, like, I admit it.
Yeah.
There's like a 4 liter, a 4.4, and then the original AMG 63 was a 6.3 NA. I did say that.
Is there still like another person to read out too? Because I thought at one point, because someone else was like, oh,
this also is Jerry. Yeah, you ready for this one? When people call you Jerry now, because which is great. And then they spell it Jerry, like Tom and Jerry. But anyway, Jerry
Seinfeld
doesn't. Oh, that's because. Oh, actually, this is a good point. And I'm not naming names because I don't want, in case Gerard gets secretly offended, I don't want him to know who's been correcting him. It was Kevin. No.
Yeah, right. No. I don't know shit.
And so I said, also, Jerry doesn't know Mercedes. Lol. The first E63 was a 6.2 V8 NA. I used to have the wagon. He said it was a 6.3. Then the next gen was a 5.4 twin turbo V8. Then it was the 4.0 twin turbo.
Now it's a
4.8 with the turbos in the center of the V8. And to Kevin/Jerry's comment on the CLS 55 AMG, it was the 5.4 supercharged V8, and that was the better motor than the CLS 63.
Are these not the same people? They say the same thing. God.
I'm just saying, man. Well, okay, I guess that's how wrong we were. Yeah, and with the 62.
I mean, it's not a Mercedes NAVA show; it's a Toyota show. So,
well, like, then the cars, we shouldn't
study them. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you what, next time you want to talk for 45 minutes, remember it's a Toyota show, not a BMW show.
I mean, I know a bit about BMWs. I definitely know more about BMWs than fucking Mercedes.
Right. Okay.
Anyway. But yeah, thank you for clarifying, because yeah, I don't know everything about them. I did nerd out on them once, and then I was like, I don't know if I'd ever have one. If I had a ton of money, I would have a Mercedes, because I would have already had all the other cars. But it definitely wouldn't be my pick. Like, you know, I picked the G80 or whatever.
I do feel like I would gravitate towards the Mercedes. Like,
we already said this. This is all in the last episode.
All right, well, everyone, then I'll just shut up.
Cram it with walnuts, Kevin. I still stand by that the CLS anything just sounds like Cialis. That's my takeaway from this. Anyway.
Nobody mentioned that they made a CLS wagon with wood grain fucking rear hatch. Because they probably didn't know about that.
You were probably, I'm sure you said it in the podcast. Yeah, they were just giving us corrections.
They want us to be factually correct. You know, I appreciate
that. Yeah, and I like that. Yes. I appreciate that. You know, it's good. You're a human, is what I'm trying to say, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Even Gerard bleeds. So there were a few cars that people said that we should have included on the list, and we didn't, and we were silly. The Evo. Is that what it was? The Evo 2 or whatever?
There's Evo 2. Yeah, there's a couple different ones. But yeah, they're both the same. 190E, 2.3 Cosworth engine. I mean, that's a notable car, but I think, like, that's a car like the M3. That's like the E30 M3. Like,
yeah,
those cars are special, but nobody really actually wants one.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Oh, really?
I mean, people want them. I'm just saying, at the end of the day, like an E30 M3, it's not really fast. It's not really great. It's just like a really special car. Same with the Gerard, 190E.
Gerard speaks for the people, by the way. People don't want this car.
I'm just saying, like a normal person.
Let it be.
If you can have a new one versus
you're not a normal person though,
because they probably end up costing the same amount of money. I don't know what an E30 M3 is worth these days, but it's probably a lot of money. And an original 2.3 Evo 2 is probably a shit ton of money when you can just go buy an AMG 63S. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it's a great car if you were a car collector, and if you were had an excess of money and you could just have that and drive it when you wanted to drive it. It's kind of like an X7. It's
apparently like the average price of an E30 M3 coupe is
100 grand.
75,000 US.
Yeah, it's 100 grand Canadian. I mean, I don't have that much money to like have an E30 sitting in my garage.
Just sitting there, yeah.
Yeah, like, and I'm not driving that thing every day because like A, you're devaluing it, and B, it's like probably not the greatest car to drive today. It's probably not very reliable and like doesn't have all the creature comforts of a new car. Anyways, they're great cars. Right. They were historical, but in my world, the 300E was more of like a.
The same website says the lowest recorded sale price for a 1990 Mercedes 190E 2.6 Evolution 2.5 Evolution 2 was 180,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Like, they're not cheap.
Average selling price of that car is $305,000.
So rare. That car, it's a great car, but it's like...
It's like unobtainium.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not like a car you can just go buy. It feels like all the cars on the list were like cars you can get. Like even to this day, you could probably go get all of those cars.
A 300E was more of like a... What was I saying earlier? It was more of like a culturally significant car. Because people bought them, people modified them. To this day, people still modify them and they still look cool. And people will still, it's kind of like an E36. Like people will, if you build a nice E36, a lot of people, even non-BMW people are like, yo, that's sick. You build a super sick 300E, like especially like a wagon or something, non-Mercedes people or non-Euro people will still look at it and be like, yo, that's sick. You know what I mean? But like if you had a 2.6 Evo, a lot of people be like, hey, that's a cool car, but they might not know exactly what the fuck is cool about it. Whereas like you could just look at a 300E that was dumped and be like, yo, that thing's cool. Okay. Anyways, that's my opinion. You know, this is our show. So
honestly, I had no say in it. I didn't care. I have a follow up. We were also asked Why did we not include the Lexus GSF?
Mate.
Or the Cadillac Blackwing. So two cars that we didn't include. And why didn't we? Now, I just didn't know about the Cadillac Blackwing, whatever. The GSF is a thing that I should love, but we did not include. And I said I had my reasons in my mind, but why do you think we didn't include the GSF?
But I felt like we already had a lot of Toyotas on there, or Lexuses, or whatever. And then, also it's like, I think I would choose the GSF, but like most people probably would take the ISF. Like Ryan would take the ISF.
Yeah.
I would take Gerard the GSF would, over.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I feel like
we screwed up.
Well, no. Well, also the GSF's a new car. But to me, in the world of cars of that era and cars that it's competing against, it's pretty lackluster. A little too late from Lexus is kind of what I think it was. And like maybe if they offered it with a manual transmission option, even.
It was sold for 4 years and they only made 2,400.
Yeah, because it was like it was expensive and it wasn't good in any particular area. It was just
from 2017 to 2020, production numbers never reached 500 a year. They made a bunch in the first year, and then for 3 years, they made less than 500 a year, and then they stopped making it.
Presumed that the ISF would just outperform it. Probably the ISF is just a better driving experience than the GSF.
But also, I think it's a different engine entirely because it's much newer.
Yeah.
The ISF came out
probably.
2008.
I mean, it's just like a big car, and probably I don't know. Anyway, like I said, I don't presume to think that it would do as well in most regards as the ISF would. But big sedan.
I would probably take the ISF. You guys are right. I'd probably take the ISF.
Well, I mean, I feel like you just take a BMW over the ISF too, though. You know.
Yeah, but if I had to choose between the two, I'd choose the ISF because more cheaply attainable, and you could modify it further to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not wrong about that.
You ain't wrong. Hey, why didn't we choose the Cadillac that was mentioned?
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. And honestly, in any historical sort of realm, the CTS-B was the one. That was the one. It came out and it was like, yo, what the fuck? Like Cadillac? Like, that's the thing. It's like,
The CTS Blackwing has 668 horsepower, six-speed manual. It's supercharged.
At the end of the day, it's a fucking Chevy, which shouldn't be a problem, but kind of is for me.
With that, okay. So Kevin, who is a regular drifter, just a drifting guy, you went to a racing seminar and you learned about road racing. Is that correct?
Yes. It was called The Art of Racecraft. And the instructor was a guy by the name of Ross Bentley. And it was put on by the CACC. Mm-hmm.
And how was that?
Yeah, I don't know. It was super interesting. I think I posted this on my story, but I was like, yeah, it's crazy to be taught by someone who feels like they've forgotten more than you'll ever know. The vast amount of experience on across all forms of racing is it's just kind of mind-boggling.
Question the first. Do you think the only
Yes. Yes.
Were you the only drifter in the room?
Yes, 100%.
Did they know that? Okay. Did they ask anybody's driving preferences?
Not really, no. Most of the people were, probably most of the people were 50 or 60, it was just a lot of old people because I kind of assumed that that's sort of what the CACC sort of is,
Why don't you explain to us what the fuck the CACC is, Kevin?
The Confederation of Auto Sport Car Clubs? Yeah. CACC.
Is that an international body or a Canadian body?
I believe that's the Canadian body. Isn't there an SCC?
SCCA.
Yeah, that's the Sports Car Club of America. Yeah. So I think that's the American version of the CACC.
And it stands for Confederation, not Canadian?
Correct.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that is weird.
What are they doing out there? Okay. Damn Yankees. Okay. I know it's not the same as a Confederate, but I can't stop now. Okay.
It's like the governing body that's there. Sanctioned by the FIA. Like the FIA sanctions, like basically all of global racing, like puts forth the regulations, the rules, all that sort of stuff, funnels down to like locally or like, I guess, nationally. And that's sort of what this is.
Yeah. Most people in there wearing New Balances except for you. And did you have your Pit Vipers on?
No, it was all day, like on Sunday from like 9:30 or 9 to 4. There was a catered lunch that was actually extremely good. It was in like the conference room of a hotel.
That's what happens when you get 50-year-old people. You know what I mean? Like, they're probably like, I ain't gonna eat that shit. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, it was like the hotel food. It was actually very good.
Just so we're clear, Gerard, you're almost a 50-year-old people, and you never say I ain't gonna. Or actually, you do say I ain't gonna eat that food.
Yeah,
but that's normally about like McDonald's or something.
Yeah.
That's
okay. So you're in there. I like the picture, Kevin, wearing a sleeveless T-shirt and, you know, like his loud Serial 9 stuff.
I didn't wear anything Serial 9 related.
So there was no opening part where you went around in a circle and told everyone said what they drive and what they were trying to learn.
No, I talked to the guys in my group that were sitting at my table though. The youngest other, like the one other guy looked super young. He was sitting at my table. Like I could tell from his jacket that he had like an RX-7. I can't remember what it was on the jacket, but like, I was like, yo, you have an RX-7? And he's like, yeah. And then the other two guys were brothers and they both drove the same car.
Which is?
And they were older. It was basically like a stock car. But like, it's 25, it's 1999 tube frame, like just a big old V8 with like a 4-speed. Yeah, they drive it in vintage because it's 25 years old technically. So they can drive it in vintage class. And it's just like twice the size of all the people they're driving with. And like kind of a completely different car, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then like when they showed me photos of it, I was just like, I mean, it's probably super fun to drive. And they said, you know, like Hewitt?
Hewitt, yeah.
The road building company.
Yeah.
Like infrastructure. I guess it was their car. Like, I don't know if like one of the higher ups built it for and had a team sponsored by them, or they like one of the people who, you know, like, so basically they're like, yeah, it's kind of like everything on it's super good and like way more than we'll ever need or maybe could even like utilize. Yeah. And then just like a bunch of like old dudes, bunch of white hairs. But
did you have to show anyone a picture of any of your cars?
I showed one dude a picture of one of my cars. Yes.
What did he say?
Which car did you show him? And what
the Altenza. Yeah. Because there was like, oh, like, well, you know, what experience do you have? And I was just like, like, just a dumb drift kid for 20 years.
Is that what you said?
Basically, yeah. I've done one autocross event. That was an autocross event that we went to because they told us we could drift there.
So you said, hey, I'm a dumb drift kid for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I have this pink car on blades that's slammed and like... How were they just like, oh, that's cool? Did they see them? Do you feel like they saw the merit in it?
I feel like they did. I feel like, because I feel like I was like just talking to them and asking them a bunch of questions to the point where they're just like, okay, like this guy like obviously knows. Because I was just like, oh, like, they're like, oh yeah, it's got like a 4-speed. And I was like, oh, is it like a G-force? And they're like, oh no, it's this. And I was just like, oh, and then like, oh, we got like a quick change rear end. I'm like, oh, is it Winters? And they're like, no, it's like a Richmond. And then it's like, oh, okay, cool. And it's like, eventually they're just sort of like, okay, like
this guy
obviously knows some shit or something. You know what I mean? Like,
and then you're like, here's my pink sedan, bitches.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're like, then that's when they stopped talking to me.
I'm going to go to their house now and have a conversation with all of them. No. Okay. So, yeah. If you are a dumb drift kid for the last 20 years, which I don't think you can be a kid and have done something for 20 years, that's fine. What led you to want to go to this?
I find it interesting. I find all aspects of vehicle control and all that sort of stuff interesting. So, and then, yeah, I've also, I have signed up for a grip event this summer. And yeah, also have the sim rig. Yeah, I don't know. I assume I'm going to drive the Alteza. It makes the most sense to drive the Alteza.
Yeah. You have to set it up for grip?
Yeah, I'd probably have to raise it up a bit and maybe make it a little bit softer. Take some of the camber out.
Different wheels? Same wheels.
Probably wouldn't really make it softer. I'd probably just let her buck. Take some of the camber out probably, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not changing the springs. I'm just, you know, talking out loud. Yeah, I would 100%. I feel like that would is like 100% necessity.
What?
Different wheels and tires.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Tires like for the, sure.
I mean, those wheels are so heavy. They're not the wheel.
Yeah, no, they're blades. Okay. Which wheels would you run in?
I mean, also you could just go.
I don't know. Like, I have no
shred clue. Car. You know what I mean? No. It could also be like isn't a stock. It could also be a stock JZX 100 with like 280 horsepower. Instead, you have 350 horsepower in an Alteza. So I don't think it's probably matter too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Like, probably better to just get a stickier, bigger tire on a fucking
on a narrower, lighter wheel. Yeah, exactly. Because that's the thing is to not to have an appropriately sized tire for my wheels is huge.
I mean, not really.
Like, what's an appropriate, like an actual tire fitment, tire guide size for a 10 and a half? Like a 305? No way. It's not a 265. 265 is so stretched.
No, it's not. On a 10 and a half?
Yeah.
No, it's not at all.
It says minimum is 265. Ideal is 270 to 285. But yeah, that is slightly smaller than I was thinking.
One, where are you going to run? And two, what happens if you fall in love with grip racing and you don't drift anymore?
Anything's possible. I mean, what happens if I fall in love with motorcycle camping and never go drifting anymore? What happens if I fall in love with the sim rig and never go? What happens if I fall in love with heroin? You know, I don't know.
Like, I'll tell you what, everyone except for the last one, I'll murder you and you end up face down in a drain ditch somewhere.
Not the last
one. Murder yourself and end up face down in a drain ditch somewhere. Yeah.
I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The track is that small, like, go-karty track on the island, VICC. Okay, what's it called? Cool. VMICC,
Vancouver Motorsports Complex.
Jerry, is that where you were meant to go last year with the BMW?
That's correct.
All right.
I thought you were going to like the full one.
No, man, just the one on the island, like by couching.
Oh, okay.
And it was just like a drive around and look cool event too. It wasn't even like you're like racing.
Now Kevin's living Gerard's dream apparently, so that's great. I don't know. Okay. All right. So Kevin goes to this class, learns a lot. What was the biggest takeaway?
Probably took like 20 photos of the slides. And then I have this little book. It is a little book. It's probably the size of a standard iPhone. But like, I think there was like 10 pages of like handwritten notes in that book. Like there's a lot of information on like a lot of subjects to try to like, you know, absorb and remember, and just like all the stories of being at Le Mans and like the, like all of these like super famous drivers he's coached. And it's like he was like a factory driver for Ford and for Ferrari. And like, you're just like, holy shit. And like grew up driving at Westwood in Coquitlam. So that's like super cool. Mm-hmm. Super cool connection, local connection as well. One of the main things that I remember was him talking about visualizing, about how you visualize doing it perfectly, and that like actually dramatically helps you do it perfectly. So I guess there was this study, like he would always state the book or the like. It seemed like he had just read so many books about pro athletes and like vision and about mentality and about like focus and learning and habits. And like, so anyways, basically like telling this story from this book that he had read. They take this test group. There's 100 people in each group. For the first group, they're like, all right, shoot 100 free throw basketballs every day for a week and then come back. And then the middle group, they're like, all right, like, don't even watch basketball. Don't look at basketball. Don't touch a basketball. Don't even think about basketballs. And then the third group, they're like, all right, so every day, just imagine yourself sinking perfectly 100 free throws. So when they come back, they retest the people. The people who were actually practicing 100 balls every day showed a 22% improvement. The people who just didn't do anything with basketballs showed no improvement. And the people who imagined themselves doing it perfectly showed a 21% improvement. So it was 1% difference in them not practicing in any way, but just mentally envisioning themselves being able to do it over and over again. And basically one of his huge takeaways was like, yeah, that's, you have to do that. Like that's, you have to do that. You have to envision yourself going through the whole track, making all the shifts perfectly, doing all the corners perfectly. And then eventually you just start to do it, you know? And that was like a kind of crazy, it's like, yeah, because there's a lot of things like that where it kind of just felt like it related to life as well. Like, yeah, sure, this is going to help you be a way better race driver, but it's just going to help you hopefully do everything better, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like turning your brain onto a different spot mentally, you know? Another one was he had this guy who I guess was like an NHL goalie. Like me, you know, he wasn't like the best NHL goalie ever or anything, but he was like an NHL level goalie. And now he was coaching him on how to be, you know, a better racer. And the guy was just like, you know, having a really down weekend. So basically he was like, hey, you know, tell me about the best game you ever played in hockey, right? And this is just before he's about to go out. And he's like, he said the guy's, you know, he's getting all excited and he's like, he's wearing his race suit, but he's diving on the ground, showing all these saves he made. And he's just all hyped up about how good he did and how he was so good at that moment playing this game. And then he said, like, he just went out right after that and drove his best laps like ever. And it was all just because he was in that mind state of he's good, he's great, he can do it. Like, you know, just like his mental outlook on himself was able to like improve something like vastly. It's just like a really interesting thing to think about.
That is, I mentioned to Kevin before we started this call, my daughter decided she has a skateboard and she was like, I want to try skateboarding. So we went downstairs and she was trying to skateboard and she was doing pretty good. And then we came upstairs and we watched a bunch of skateboard videos. And it is funny because like in line with what you were saying was I was watching Sky Brown because she was the youngest, like this super young skateboarder. She started when she was like 3 or something like that. She's been to the Olympics. And so there's these videos and my daughter's watching this 11-year-old to do all these tricks. And she says the same thing where it's like, you have to think you're going to land the trick. The moment you think that you're not going to make it, you don't make it. You have to believe that you're going to like stick the landing. And I was like, oh, these are like really good lessons there, you know, and you hear that all the time. It's like the videos of like people doing the jumps or the drop-ins. It's like, if they don't believe they're going to do it, they don't even make it, you know, like they don't even make the jump in the beginning or they don't stick it. So I think that's a very interesting thing.
I was going to say, my only contribution to this is honestly, that's the only way that I can drift, because I definitely have the least seat time of literally anybody probably, but like I always think I'm really good at it and like think about it and think. And I swear that's the only way that I can actually be at any sort of level that I'm at, because I certainly don't have the fucking seat time. You know what I mean? Like, I don't consider myself a good driver, but like, I'm probably a better driver than my seat time would lead on. You know what I mean? That's kind of what
you got that swagger. What
I
would say. Yeah.
I just think I was, you know what I mean? So
I mean, that's definitely part of it, man. You know,
My only I was gonna say too, like after Kevin, you talked about going to this race class, I thought, even as a person who doesn't actually do any driving, I was like, you know what, there's probably value in going to do that anyway, just as a person that's like an automotive enthusiast and like sitting through it and learning those things, and it probably does improve probably like at any point or at any rate, it will improve your knowledge points by, you know, a substantial amount of experience points just by like sitting through the class. But I don't know. What do you think?
That was sort of how I felt about it too, where I was just like, you know, like, all right, this is like a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but it's like, sounds interesting and like, you know, might as well sort of thing.
Yeah. And you don't like go on YouTube and watch videos about stuff like that though. You're not like, I'm going to sit down and watch, you know.
No, not totally. Sometimes. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how many hours of YouTube videos though I would have to watch to gain the same level of information that I got in those 7 hours though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, man. It's like going to like a seminar. You know what I mean? Like about
business
or about whatever. It's like you could watch videos all day long, but if you go to a seminar put on by an actual like you did, you know, like a professional that has experience in the realm of what, you know, you want the expertise to be in, and he's the guy, it's invaluable. Like it could have been fucking $1,000 and it would have been worth it. You know what I mean? I don't know how much it was. I just assume it was not $1,000, but
$1,000.
Some of those seminars,
it was $70 Canadian.
Yeah.
So less than $10 an hour. And like I said, there was like a full catered lunch that I like gorged myself on. Yeah, exactly. Like I would have spent $30 eating that, you know, at a restaurant. So
yeah,
but you made lifelong friends. No, I don't know.
Some of those seminars, like a business seminar, they're really fucking expensive. But like, if you go to the right one that has a person speaking in the realm that you want to learn in,
yeah,
it could be worth so much more than like if it makes your business.
Yeah, you know, just like changes your outlook or like
more. Yeah, like makes you a better person, makes you succeed in, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
That type of shit is
learning.
I also think like, you know what I mean? It's because I feel like that's how I learned how to ride a motorcycle. Was like, I just watched a gajillion YouTube videos and then would go practice it and then watch a bunch more YouTube videos and then go practice it. And it's like, I feel like I was able to teach myself like a bunch of skills to ride off road very quickly. Then I went on this like 5-night trip when I literally had, you know, I'd ridden around in a construction site basically for 40 hours or like not even close to that on dirt. And then I went on this like 5-night motorcycle camping trip. And yeah, basically like, I feel like I did pretty good there, but like, I do think like a 2-day course in that I'd be better than I am now. You know, you maybe don't learn the bad habits, you know, you don't get the muscle memory of the bad habits.
Don't know if it's true for every scene or hobby or whatever but in the car world, we come up thinking we already know the things, you know. Does that make sense? Like you get behind the wheel and you're like, I like cars, so I must be a good driver. Or
there's a lot of ego for sure.
A lot of ego. And you need
money. That a bit though. Like if you're like a race car driver or whatever, like you need to think you're the best or else you're not going to be the best, you know?
I agree, but imagine if I got behind the wheel and was like, I'm the best. It's like, well, no, like there's things that I need to learn and understand. But that's the thing. It's like, if you live in a bubble and don't expand, you kind of just run around thinking like you're the be all end all of a thing because you have nothing to measure your experience against. And then you go out and you're like, oh, this person actually knows more than I do or has a sense of it. I mean, I've had friends that have been like, I like to drive fast, so I must be a really good driver. I feel like I'm fast. And then they like went go-karting with a bunch of other car guys and like, oh no, I'm like, I actually don't get it at all. It's just, I know how to hit open throttle, you know, like wide open throttle in the prairies. It's a very different thing, you know, but if you're not,
that is one part about the grip racing that does appeal to me is that you do get to like test yourself, you know. against someone in a way where there is a clock or whatever, and it is like, all right, definitively, I'm better at this than you are.
I think that exists in drifting, but the measure for it is different. And the measure for it, Kevin, is how many photos and media do you have of your car at the end of the event? And you can tell if, and maybe this is just me, but like if a car drives by and it's doing something and the people like put their cameras down and use that as a time to go through their memory cards, it's like, that's a testament right there, you know, like, and you can be like, I'm the best. But then also, if you're the guy that's like, yo, does anybody have any pics from the event or any media, holler at me. It's like, you're not the winner. But
yeah,
that's from my perspective. Maybe drivers feel differently about it. And I'm sure the people that don't have a lot of media could write in and be like, you're dumb. I get better every time. And I'd say, send me the media to prove it. They won't, because it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Another thing that I thought was kind of interesting was like, he would be like, oh, like basically like take a lap around the track. Like, don't, you know, don't drive slow, like try to drive quickly, but like, don't concentrate on driving quickly, concentrate on trying to see as many visual cues as you can, you know? And then another one, he would be like, all right, you know, this session, go out and try to feel as many inputs through the tires and through the chassis as you can. Like, feel where the bumps are, feel where there's tiny little potholes. Like, okay, that pothole is like right after the pothole, you start braking. You know what I mean? Like, feel all those things. And the other one was like, hear it, you know, like do a session where you just listen, like, oh, like I can hear the exhaust reverberate. And then as soon as I pass the wall, the tone changes totally. Or like a huge one is like listening to the tires. It's like the tires will make a noise when they're at, they don't make a noise. Then when they're at full grip, they're making like a squealing noise. And then when they're past full grip, they're making a different squealing noise. So like listening to how much grip the car has through the tires was like another super important thing. But they're like, some people, when you tell them to like listen to all these things, they'll hear something different and it sets them up better. You know, they're like, oh, now when I hear this, now I know to do this. And same thing with the visual ones. They're like, oh, like I never noticed before, but there's this tree and that's the perfect breaking point, you know? And like, same thing with the feeling one. They're like, oh, when I bounce the car off the rumble strip on corner three, like then it allows me, sets me up better for like, you know, the next entry into four or something. And it's like, when you do different things or try to pay attention to different things, you start to see the different things. And when you have the most information, whether it be like visual or by audio or by tactile, then whoever has the most inputs and the most like little things along the track that they can make reference to is going to do the best.
And also the good thing too is if there is ever a time when something is compromised, like your visuals compromised or your hearing's compromised or something, then you have all that extra stuff. Like if you
totally
like, you know, blew a, I don't know, like your car got super loud and like, but you knew where the tree was, or if you like somehow like the sun was in your eyes and you couldn't see the tree, but you could hear the tire change, or like, you know what I mean? Like all those things combined make you better, but also all those things in their own right, like could help you in just so many more ways. Right.
Yeah.
Versus just like, oh, this is the breaking point. This is the that, you know, I don't know if you follow Misha Sharadin, the Nürburgring guy.
Yeah. That's when Ryan was like, you don't like watch any of this on YouTube. It's like, that's basically all that. Like I watch his videos.
His dope. Like when you watch him do a lap with someone and he's just like casually like, okay, so right there, turn right there. This is where you hold it, turn in now. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, he knows that track, like literally the back of his hand. When you watch him drive literally any of those cars, he's kind of like not even really paying attention. And he could just take a car that he just hopped in like 2 seconds ago, no matter how good or shitty or what the setup is. And he could just drive it at the limit, like for 7 minutes at least. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty nuts, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I started like watching his videos, like, yeah, I just want to get a fucking BMW track car that like doesn't have to be fast. That's why I wanted the 130i 6-speed, just like It's just a basic good car that like you could just drive the shit out of and it'll just give you the thing you want with the least amount of like entry, you know what I mean?
Scratches the itch with the lowest entry barrier.
Yeah, and it's probably a relatively competitive car if you're a good driver. Like you could probably fuck up some like actual fast cars if they weren't as good a driver as you. You know what I mean? Which is kind of always a good feeling.
If it's a technical track that doesn't have a long straight.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like you don't need 500 horsepower, right?
Yeah. To me, I was like trying to compare to. I was trying to take all of these things and apply them to drifting in my world, you know? And I was like, the imagining one, like, I feel like I used to do that. Because the same thing, it's like, you know, you 20 years ago, Sims weren't a thing. And like, you would imagine, you'd literally just sit there, imagine yourself driving the track over and over again. That's definitely something that you can take over. But like, trying to imagine like, all right, like I'm going to go do a couple laps and just try to listen to the car, listen to the tires, or like do a couple laps and just like, I'm going to try and look and see things on the track that I never normally look at. It's like, all right. But yeah, I haven't been to the track since I took that course either. So I haven't been able to try to apply any of these things.
I wanted to make a Star Wars joke about having, you know, I can't see anything with a blast shield down. And then that's when I realized that the beer that I drank finally kicked in and I was like, I need to shut the fuck up. So, but with that, I want to thank Blaine from Righteous Garage for sending me this 8.2% double IPA. So thanks, Blaine.
What are you drinking?
Hey, sipping on sunshine.
I'm drinking the same beer. Thank you, Blaine from Righteous Garage. Yes.
Thanks, Blaine.
I have some Jerry beers for you, Gerard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll bring them tomorrow.
Cool.
Yeah. I forgot the hats at my place and there's some patches. So I'll bring those next time I see you. Thanks, Ooh, Blaine.
I do love a good patch.
Yeah, you do. Hey, Kevin. So now that you have all these skills and you got a little notebook and we're all proud of you, what is the next track you're going to drive? Where are you going? Where is Kevin going next?
I don't really know. So this year is up in the air a bunch.
Okay.
The only event that I have definitively paid for and will be driving, I guess, is that grip event on the island. And then I just signed up for an event at Oregon Raceway Park in July. So the Ridge event is happening again. I'd like to do that. And then I reached out to Cap D about Penticton 3 weeks ago and they were like, yeah, it's happening. Like we're going to make a post real soon about it. And I was like, okay, sweet. And then like they haven't, and I haven't heard anything about it. So like,
yeah,
I don't know if that's happening. Like, so I mean, I'd like to drive that one maybe, but like.
That's very close to the Oregon one, right?
It is. Yeah. It's like 5 days away from each other.
Yeah. Risky business, but Canada Day long weekend in Penticton is glorious and might be harder to find accommodations now. And when's the grip event? Sorry, just
the 6th
of June July.
No, sorry. I thought you meant the Oregon event. The grip event is 8-6 day. So it's August 5th, August 4th.
I might have a pitch for that, but we'll talk about it later. Now that I've had this 8.2% beer, I'll just say it right now, but wouldn't it be fun to make a video of when a drift guy does grip racing?
Yeah, that would just be fun. Thought.
If not,
that's a great idea. If not,
it's fine. I'll shut up and I'm going to let Gerard say whatever he was going to say because I appreciate him.
I think I might have forgot.
So that is great. Kevin, you went, you learned some things. And so there's a lesson there. It's like I was going to say you're never too old, like you're ancient. You're the youngest one of all of us. Just a 20-year-old drift kid. Not 20-year-old drift kid.
I came out of the womb drifting. Now I'm only 20.
Also, you're not. Yeah, could you imagine? Hey, what would you do differently? Don't answer that.
Everything.
Buy all the 8.6s and GTRs and everything. And that's the answer for every car drive. Okay. I got a question and I think
I would just buy a house when I was younger. That's what I would have done. Done everything I could.
Okay, so what's the next question? Subject anything? What's the next anything? Or are
we got one? And I think this is a like no. Yeah, we're done. Kevin, okay. I think that was a really great segment, and thank you for that.
Thank you for that. I was very
okay.
Okay, thank you.
No, you got to stay because this next question involves you. Flocodile Dundee sent us a message. Said, got a couple of questions for the pod. I feel like all three of you have pretty unique style to your cars that doesn't really seem to fit into a specific styling box. Where do you look for inspiration, and what has inspired you to form the Serial 9 style? Also, for Kevin and Gerard, what inspired your driving styles? Are there any specific drivers you try to emulate or a region of the world that you draw inspiration from? And for you, Ryan, that's me, who's your inspiration for photography? What photographers did you draw inspiration from when forming your photography style? I thought that was a fun question.
I like that question.
Because it singles me out too.
Aww. You go first then.
Yeah.
No, because we no. I'll do
no, talk about the media Davis,
thing at the end. Media questions. Yeah, it's actually. I don't actually think it's Laredo Davis. Laredo Davis is amazing. That's Larry Chen for anyone who doesn't listen to all of our podcasts. But Kevin and I call him Laredo Davis. Long story short, Kevin can remember his name. I think Laredo Davis, Larry Chen, is a great photographer, and yeah, his work is amazing. But realistically, I think the thing that actually formed my style was I had the drifting book that
Antonio Alvendia or Alvanita?
Alvalita, yeah, that guy.
I didn't even say the name yet. Antonio Avendias, Avalita?
I just said
isn't it Avendita?
No. I think it's Alvanita. Alvanita?
I thought it was like Alvanita is what I thought it was.
Okay.
Antonio so, Alvarez, right. But I don't know. I also cannot pronounce a single person's
Alvendia.
Name right. So.
Antonio Alvendia.
Isn't that what I said? I haven't even said it yet, but I was going to say Alvendia. And
but,
you literally right. Interrupted.
But he also muted himself. Bitch. I don't know what was going on there. Himself. It looked like you really needed because, to say something, but you muted yourself.
Because my phone started going off and I didn't have the phone on mute, so I muted
Okay.
I knew I might be wrong, so I muted myself and corrected you anyway. But yes, I had he a long time ago released it a drifting book that I keep in the back of the Aristo, and it is from like, fuck, I don't even know, like the 2000s.
Yeah, it's like maybe 2009. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like
I try to buy it off Ryan every time I see it.
Yeah.
And one day you'll like, be heard.
And it was one of the first things I think I was like maybe real like just full on drifting in print media form. And looking at those photos, there's a lot of stuff I think that if you look at those early photos that also influenced the way that like I take photos. There's like the angle, the speed, you know. The blur, all that stuff is, I think, comes from that. And then it's funny that someone wrote like, and it's a great book. It's very educational about like how the culture got there. It's like Sideways Across America. I don't know what it's called. But anyway, it's funny that somebody wrote that book so early on into like drift culture. Also, I think that book is part of the reason that Benson started his podcast, Still 80 Mania.
Yeah.
Because like, they were very involved in the scene, but him and Antonio bumped heads over something that I'm not aware of. And Benson's barely in the book, even though he's a very important figure in the rise of drift culture in North America. So, anyway, that had a big effect on me. And then the other things that I still think of, and I'm grateful that I've got, you know, that in drifting, you get to meet the people, but like, Will Rogge from Keep Drifting Fun and Joshua Heron did a lot of great, like, just amazing work in the video landscape that I would never be anywhere near being able to replicate that. But, like, that their shit was amazing when I started out and still is. Like I said, Larry Chen. Those are the things that influenced me. Hey, you two, what influences your style?
I just feel like, yeah, I don't know. I just try to take influence from everything that I see ever, and, or, you know, the things that I like about all the things that I see ever, and just try to do my own thing. There's also like four or five other pink Altezas that, like, I'm sure the exact same shade of pink that my car is out there. So, like, it's not like, it's not the most unique thing, you know?
Yeah, but I'm going to feed you a bit of an answer. You all said right. that, like, you do look it up, at, buddy. Like, to be more specific, you've looked at like low rider culture.
Don't take my answer, Ryan. Muscle. Don't take my answer, Ryan.
Why are you doing that? Fucking mute yourself.
I haven't spoken much this whole podcast. So anyway,
well, yeah, exactly. So yeah, like, you go first. Okay. Why do I gotta go?
Jerry, you go. Yeah, you go.
Okay. For Gerard, my style. It's just because I'm so sick. I just have these really great visions all the time. I'm, you know, usually the best at everything I do. So I just do it and it becomes great and people follow it. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. VIP style, always kind of big influence for me. That's kind of the sedan aspect of it. But then, yeah, like the showiness of lowriders, I guess. But like mostly the VIP style, just like the big wheels, the fenders, the low, the that. But then also the drifting aspect, that whole night, like Japan, the quintessential like 2000 drift car. I don't know. I think I've said this in the podcast before. There's a couple of cars that always have stood out to me. It's like back in the day, it was actually the guy who started T-Demand, and I can't remember who it is now, but they were like candy red S chassis and they were just so fucking nice. And like, I can't remember. It was Drift Tengoku. I really don't remember any of these people's names anymore. It's been a long time, but yeah, one guy went on to start T-Demand, I think it was. And then the other guy still builds sick cars. And then there was one JZX 100 back in the day, black BN kit, work equips, staggered 18-19. And I remember thinking, man, this is the fucking coolest car I'd ever seen. Cause it was like the culmination of like that S chassis drift car style, but in a sedan. So it was like, they took the VIP car and then added the like S13 sort of like aggressive drift car style to it. And that's always been my thing. But then just taking inspiration from like all sorts of shit. Like, I don't know, I like Lamborghinis. I like big trucks. I like flashy things. I like, and I also just like things to be unique. So to see what everyone else is doing and then how to sort of like elevate on that. That's my thing. And then drivers, I don't know. I'm not really like a huge like driver follower. I just remember like the video of Tezuka and I thought that car was cool. I don't think he's a very amazing driver, but like it was the style that was cool. And then I don't know, just for me, big power, big smoke. I wouldn't even really say big angle, just like a big dick swinging car. That's about it. And then as long as you can kind of like control that and like be a half decent driver, I think that's kind of sick. I'd rather have a really crazy car that like people really, really, really remember. And like the driving is like 7 out of 10 versus a 10 out of 10 driver and like a 7 out of 10 car. So I'd have like an 11 out of 10 car, 7 out of 10 driving versus an 11 out of 10 driving and a 7 out of 10 car. That's me.
Great. Hey, Gerard, you're doing it. You're doing it. You're sick. Yeah, man.
Doing it,
you want to take another?
Doing it well.
I present raised out of Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I feel like similar to Gerard. Like, I feel like I try to take influences from a bunch of random places. And, you know, obviously, like, VIP cars are part of that. And lowriders are part of that. And that sort of stuff. Yeah, I remember with my X7, like, this is, like, this is back in the day. But, like, I always wanted it to be, like, from the outside, it looks like a VIP car, like, you know, like awesome fitment, big wheels, like super like nice aero that's, you know, low to the ground, like all these tinted windows or whatever. And like, but then you get up to it and you like pop the hood and it's like a full crazy race engine. You look inside, there was like, you know, Wilwood pedal set, full crazy cage. It was like trying to meld together like VIP appearance and like full out crazy like purpose-built race drift car, but never fully, you know, like you know, that car eventually, you know, if you had it forever and I was still doing things to it, you know, it'd be like, have like the leather wrapped roll cage and like, you know, like all that sort of nonsense. But yeah, I don't know. I do kind of feel like that, like lowrider. I used to have a lowrider mag subscription for quite a while, multiple years. And like, I think by part of that's still fully there. Like, I just love having all of the suspension, like the subframes, the sway bars, like everything under the car, like powder coated or painted or plated or anodized or whatever it may be. And like, I just love how, like, I just, yeah, to me, like, somehow for some reason, that's like more important almost. Like, I could be okay with like the fender being fucked up a bit and then you're like, whatever, this, that, or the other, but that makes no sense because like that's the part you actually see. So, but and then yeah, same for drivers. I kind of feel like the same sort of thing that Gerard said. It's like I feel like all my drivers are like, it's just a testament to how old I am, where I'm like, yo, I like Tetsuya Hibino because like he was like one of the first people doing like the Ebisu jump in his 8.6, and he always drove 11 coupe. So I like really liked him, and I like loved Ueno because he just like was just so such a madman on the steering wheel in his Corolla. And like, yeah, it's just, you know, I loved like Noma Ken because he was just such a character and like always just made so much smoke because his cars were always just huge cars, you know?
Yeah. I guess one driver I do like a lot still is Saito. It just seems like he gets in a car and it's just like fucking crazy.
And he's just like the ultimate kid too. Like, yeah, that's what I mean. He's just like, yo, I'm going to like, it's like anything you can imagine. He can just imagine it, but then do it.
And then shred it. Yeah.
And then shred it. Exactly. Yeah. It's like,
would you say those drivers influence your style of how you approach driving? Or is it just people that you like?
I don't even know what that means, bro. I don't drive anymore. So,
God damn it, Jerry.
The style in which you envision that you drive.
The style in which I envision I drive would be like that, yes. Like, I want to take the car that looks like it can't do the thing and do the thing, or at least do the thing closest to the thing that people think it can't.
I think you've said that before, and I think that might be my favorite way you've ever said your. How you explain your style and how you want to drive is taking the thing that looks like it shouldn't be able to do the thing and then do the thing. And that's a good way to look at it.
I mean, that's always kind of cool seeing these like sort of backwards entries with like the JZXs and stuff. Now it's like for a long time, it was like mostly just like S chassis and like, you know, any Nissan doing it. But like now people are doing it with like JZ. Like you definitely still haven't seen one with like a GS or like an Aristo or like, you know, that. I mean, I'm sure it's doable. There's probably just not enough people doing it, but like,
yeah,
the harder the car is to drive, if you can still drive it in the playing field of the cars that are easier to drive, then I think that's sort of cool.
Should I say where I get my inspiration for how I style my car?
Yeah.
Good. Not for all of driving. For driving. I don't drive, but you know, I'll be very honest. I don't have like it's not that I don't have the affinity for it, but I don't have the ties to Japanese, like direct Japanese culture. So you're never going to hear me like reference how a Japanese driver changed the way that I see the world. I think just in the time that I came up, import cars were very popular. California seemed like the mecca at the time. I know that it wasn't. The Aristo is probably the car that I've executed on the best. My thought on where that comes from is really, even though I don't drift, I do feel a kinship to drift culture. I feel like that's, you know, it's brought me a long way with all the things that I've done in and around drift culture without ever actually being a drifter. And so,
yeah, drifter.
Yep. But I think drift cars inspired me. And then so once you start doing that, it's hard to own a sedan and not to pump Jerry's tires. But like, obviously, Gerard has an influence on me. Kevin has an influence on me. I don't know why I said not to pump Gerard's tires.
I hope I'm a bad influence.
Let's pump Kevin's tires. Yeah, yours is mostly beer. Gerard's is the, you know, when I had my Aristo first, I think, and then Gerard got his Aristo, and I was like, oh, this guy's gonna build a better than me, and I was a little bit sassy. Thought, oh, god damn it. But luckily I get to hang out with two guys that have a lot of knowledge about big old Toyota sedans, even though one refutes them all the time. And so I take that. Around the same time I got the Aristo, I met Chob. That was about the same time he got his GS. Chob had a bit of an influence on me as well. And so I think I'm actually more influenced by the people, you know, that I would count as friends and how I dictate what I do with my car than I am by now, like, outward, you know, like media or what people did in the past. So yeah, I have a vision, and the veil side hood on my car was maybe a bit of a fluke, but it worked out. And the one piece wheels happened because I have, I wasn't going to build a VIP car, and I wanted it to have a sporting, you know, a sense of sporting to it. And one piece wheels seemed to put that all together. But realistically, my style and influences and everything comes from the people in and around my life that I actually like talk to. So yeah, that's the weird response for a guy.
That's almost a better response, though. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I really thought it would come from media. Now that I think about it, it isn't. It's like, no.
I mean, yeah, you're a media guy. You know.
Yeah, but maybe I know that all media guys are all full of shit. No.
Exactly. Maybe you look at media differently. You just like analyze it. You know.
The other thing is sometimes, not always, but sometimes the people taking the pictures aren't as knowledgeable as the people behind the wheel, you know, I don't know, or the people that are building the parts. I live a very charmed life that I happen to get to do a podcast and make videos and take photos of two guys that have very in-depth knowledge of how Toyota suspension works and how it should work. So, I mean, you know, that's my answer, I think. And I guess it's, so my style has grown and shifted over the years. I'm not going to sit here and tell you like, oh, I'm trying to bring back the glory days of the 2000s. I lived through that, but I'm also not putting neon underglow on my car and doing all that stuff, you know? So
that'd be fun.
I'm not the hugest fan of neons either. I could live, give or take them. I think after I had all the other shit, I would have neons, but like, it is kind of a thing to see, like, kind of a weird thing to see, like, cars with neon, but like, fucking,
that's it.
Hose clamps. yeah. You know what I mean? Like the engine bay's got like hose clamps instead of like AN fittings. It's like, bro, your priorities are all fucking wrong. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's super funny.
And then, cars are broken down at, you know what I mean? At the event. Yeah. They got neons. Anyways, go on.
I was going to say, like, as we're having this conversation, like for the last like 20 minutes, I've been looking up like custom neon signs because I'm like, yo, I want to have a trunk neon so bad. Like, I feel like the Altezza is silly enough that it could do it, but like the car I want to do it with it is the GS. Like,
yeah,
the Altezza GS also lends itself more to it though, because it is,
yeah, because it's that style, rider
car,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think it would be much more fitting in the GS.
I would never do it in the Altezza either because I just repeatedly smashed the trunk. Yeah. No, I have to use it, and I also abused the trunk.
That's what I mean. Like,
the trunk. Yeah. Just like, the worst ROI on a upgrade. It's just like, fuck! I broke my sign again. You made a post the other day talking about how you got like cheap tail lights. You're like, I got more cheap tail lights. It's like, but I better get this custom neon sign to go in my trunk and put an actuator in. So
I was never for that car.
I will say the other thing that I think about, I want to say for style, is it needs to look good in a photo, you know?
Yeah,
that's a very interesting point. Because, no matter how good the driving is, like if the car can't look good in a photo in the pits, it's probably not going to look good out there, you know?
I agree.
It's got to stand on its own. It's got to be cool enough without you driving it.
Because really, when you do think about it, and I guess I don't often, the three of us all have very different cars, like different style to our cars and what we do. And the there's a Venn diagram that overlaps, obviously, but like, yeah, there is a, it is, they are all very different, I would say. Is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you feel, I don't, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I feel that they're pretty similar, but.
Well, I mean, they're in the, I think at the core, they're the same. I think in the middle of the Venn diagram, it's a Toyota that's slammed or lowered with now functioning suspension and like good wheel fitment, good engines, like good basis, like platform. So that's another thing. I know that's not style, but that's like, that's in there. And then they are all, I feel bad saying this about myself because this isn't how I talk about myself, but garner attention in some way or another, but not like, oh, I did a dumb thing. Like, oh, look, I, you know, I put like I don't know. What's a dumb thing neon? People do to their cars now? Neon? On my car? Or what's another dumb thing people do that's like just like easy barrier of entry? Like I did, what's like a stupid mod people do right now? That's like a, hey, look at me. It's the most, hey, look at me mod.
Ganadors.
Wrapping your car. Yeah. Wrapping your Tesla.
Wrapping your Tesla, yeah. Like none of, so I think in that realm, those are the similarities, but like, you know, the wheel choices are all very different. The colors and the representation. I still run stickers on my back window, like the year is 2008.
I had lots of stickers on my back window.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And Kevin's got the livery, depending on which Gerard car we're talking about, I guess the Cresta is not really a thing now, but when that's done, will it have a livery on it, do you think?
Oh yeah, buddy. Hell yeah, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. How far, where are we at with the Cresta? Where is that going?
I don't know.
Are we moving?
Man. Fucking.
Okay, great. I mildly forgot when I asked about the Cresta. I was like, oh yeah, no, the Blit. The Blit is the car that runs and is out there in the world. Blit and you're always changing the wheels. It doesn't run?
No, it does.
Why?
What's I want to actually, it does, actually start driving. I just want to put the rear hubs on it and then put the 19s on it, fix them so they're not losing air. So I can actually fucking drive it without worrying about getting a flat tire. And I want to drive it because the weather's nice enough now that I can drive the Blit. So we'll see how much we love it. I love the idea of the Blit. I love the fact that like I finally finished a car and it's like kind of fucking sick. And it's a obscure rare Toyota, but like I really want to move on the BMW project and like.
Well, the Blit's great, and you have so many different wheels for it. I feel like.
But all those wheels now fit on the BMW.
Hey, so what a great time! It's very exciting. It's like springtime. Things in the car world are happening. On the coming, heating up. Good job, you two. Very proud of you and all the things you do. And thanks again to everyone who's written in with questions and comments. It's nice that we got corrections. We do appreciate you. Are we releasing by the time this is up, there should be an AK-49 video for the...
100%. I think it'll probably release it tomorrow. Send an email tomorrow.
If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't checked out the AK-49 video for the JZS-16, please go check that out. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Carter Jackson drifts my car while and it's at an ungodly ride height, but it's still neat to watch. So, be a deer. Go watch the video. Like, subscribe, share it. It's good. Anyway,
we were talking about BMW for a second there, Ryan. Fucking shit, man. Yeah, I got some hubs, bro. I got 501/14 fucking hubs. That's what I was trying to say when I said the Varianzas will fit on the BMW.
I was trying to sell parts for your company.
No, but you're like, with that said, like I thought we were like signing off.
Is that what you're signing doing? Off.
Okay, let's sign off. Forget
it. Okay, thanks. I was trying to be a good host. And with that said, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. See you next week.
Spending your time with us.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Serial Podcast 9.